Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Dungeon of Doom. I'm Kyle Meinke, Lions beat writer for MLive, joined as always by Big Ben Raven. Ben, it is January 4. We've had a few days to let the dust settle from the debacle in Dallas. How are you feeling about state of affairs heading here into the season finale for Detroit?
You know, a week ago, we were talking about the weird energy in Allen Park and all that. I feel the exact opposite this week. This really does feel like all the right things I've been saying about fueling them and stuff. This is a focused team that has done their best to put that debacle behind them. And I believe what they're putting out there because I kind of see it on their faces. I see the way they're talking to us in the locker room. It's a pissed off, motivated group. And yeah, man, it's January and there's more football to be played.
Including on Sunday against the Minnesota Vikings. Lions are pretty much locked into the number three seed. There is a bit of mobility up to number two, but it's a bit of a long shot. Dallas and Philly both have to lose and they play bad teams this week. Yeah. So likely they're hosting the number six seed, which right now is the Los Angeles Rams. Yes, please. You and I did a guest spot on a different podcast this week, and we were asked favorite matchup in round one for Detroit. I'm just like, you know, they can play the Packers. I think we all want to see the Rams come to Detroit in the natural juicy ass storylines coming out of that game with Stafford and Goff going against the teams that traded them away. Stafford was so good in Detroit, but obviously didn't have the team success here. There was a ton of, you know, disagreement over his role in that. But for him to come back and play his first game, his first playoff game ever at Ford Field and do it for the Los Angeles Rams while Goff's going against the coach that traded him away and gave up on him. Yes, please sign me up.
Yeah, it doesn't get better than that. And I mean, yeah, the Packers are a nice consolation prize because some generational demons could be done away with there for sure. But it's all about the Rams. That's the juiciest. That's the sexiest. That's the guaranteed see a Monday night 8:15 p.m. matchup.
We got a packed mailbag on tap for today.
Characters.
I think that we should dive in. We have to run to practice in a bit too. So let's dive into some of these questions. Again, they come through our subtext program. You can find that on any Lions story at MLive. Go to the bottom. You'll see promotions for how to sign up for free. Send us texts, get in on the mailbags. We got tons of questions from all over the country. Got one from Singapore this week, Ben.
I know, man. That's pretty sweet. Thanks to everybody listening to us and putting the location on there. We really like that. It's great to see.
I love it. I'm a big traveler myself. I just like going around the world. And there was one time I was in Serbia and I like walked into this cafe. And I didn't tell the guy what I did. I just said, I'm from Detroit. He's like, oh, Detroit Lions. I love Detroit Lions. Like, I mean, I have the worst Serbian accent ever. But like he was going off. I think this might have been in 2021 because I think he was talking about how, you know, Dan Campbell, this new. I'm like, I'm in Belgrade. Like, what is happening? I could be anywhere in Detroit right now. But seeing the questions come in from all over the place, that's pretty cool. Glad to hear from you guys. And the questions are getting pretty strong, as you'd expect from a team that has a lot to play for down the stretch. Our first question is from David Qualls. David asks, now that we're toward the end of the regular season, who do you see as the Lions' offensive and defensive MVPs? And we have a lot of questions coming up about the, you know, what happened in Dallas, Jared Goff. But I wanted to start with this one, Ben, because we are heading toward the season finale. We're seeing big picture stuff come out now. Pro Bowl stuff came out this week. Amon-Ra St. Brown, not a Pro Bowler. I was shocked.
Yeah. It makes me take
But
it so much less serious too when a guy like that's left off.
I know it's a popularity contest, but he's second in the league in receptions with somebody named Tyreek Hill. He's top five in yards. And I know it's a popularity contest, but he's a popular guy. He was in the Pro Bowl last year. I really am surprised to see that he's not a Pro Bowler. Ben, is Amon-Ra your offensive MVP or is it somebody else?
My offensive MVP is Jared Goff because I think he has picked up where he left off last year. There are some bumps in the road, but he has been the most important, the most impactful, and he's kind of reinforced that like this team will go as far as he can take them, and he's taken them pretty far this year.
No doubt this team wouldn't be where it is without Jared Goff. I mean, there are better quarterbacks in the league, but he is a great fit
Yeah.
for what they want to do offensively in this roster. And it's a very young roster still. And he's a great distributor. And when he has time in the pocket, he's great. He's not very mobile. That's always going to be a weakness in his game. He's not at his best under duress. But with a clean pocket and a lot of playmakers around him, which is what Detroit has done in the last 3 years, is surround that guy with just a ton of talent. Jared Goff is as good as, any quarterback in the league, maybe not named Patrick Mahomes or somebody like that. Like he's not an elite guy, but he's very good. I can't go away from what you said, Ben, and MVP is traditionally a quarterback award, so you're kind of following that logic. For me, this team is a team that's built in the trenches. And like I just said, like Jared Goff is not a good quarterback when he's under duress. Like he needs good protection, and the Lions give him some of the best protection in the league while paving the road for one of the best running games in team history, certainly in the post-Barry era. I think you can see where I'm going with this.
Yes, yeah.
And there's a lot of options up front, but to me, there's nobody more unique, better than Penei Sewell. And listen, they're like Frank Ragnow could be the best center in the league. So there are different places you can go with this, but I just think Penei Sewell is so unbelievably good and unique. And this team wouldn't be this offense wouldn't look like it does without Penei Sewell. And that's the value. Like, yeah, he's not touching the ball every play like Goff. And I can see Ben because he is a quarterback. I mean, like they're always going to have tremendous value, especially when they play like Goff does. But this offense wouldn't function the way that it does. Goff wouldn't function the way that he does. David Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs, these guys wouldn't function the way they do without Penei Sewell, who hasn't missed a snap since his rookie year, he's allowed one sack on almost 700 pass blocks this year. Playing like this isn't a center.
He's awesome.
Like this is an offensive tackle going up against Danielle Hunter and Max Crosby and these guys. Like allowed zero sacks against those guys. One sack all year. By the way, he's the number one run blocker among all offensive tackles. That's in addition to what he does as a pass blocker. According to Pro Football Focus, he's the number one offensive tackle overall, according to PFF. That's left and right side. I mean, this guy is an unbelievable talent, pass protector. He's fierce as a run blocker. And on top of all of that, he's among the most athletically gifted offensive tackles I've ever seen, which a lot it opens up the playbook, allows the Lions to do so many things other teams can't. For me, Penei Sewell is offensive MVP.
It's hard to argue that. Last year I didn't give it to Goff, so maybe making up for that from a year ago. But yeah, there's no disagreements on Sewell. He's one of, if not the most valuable offensive lineman in the league based on age, performance, and what he's done between the left and the right side. So there you go.
I also gave some consideration to Sam Laporta because he's been historically good. He's rewritten the record book for a rookie tight end in Detroit. He is currently, as of this recording, tied for the all-time record for catches by any
It's ridiculous.
rookie tight end in NFL history. I mean, this is a historical season. But when you're talking about MVP and the overall impact on the offense, Laporta is historically good for a rookie tight end, and he's among already a top three, top four, top five tight end, regardless of experience in the NFL today. But in terms of overall value for a team that's built in the trenches, that wants to run the football, that has just this unique, unbelievable talent that never misses a single snap, I gave Sewell the edge.
No, Amon-Ra was the other guy in my conversation, just because when you take him away, the passing attack doesn't look the same too. So, yep, good options all across the board this year.
I mean, it's a deep offense. It's one of the best in the league, top three or four at this point. I know they joined San Francisco and Miami is the only teams with top five rushing and passing attacks. I mean, there's the balance of versatility is incredible. It's a testament to Ben Johnson, of course, but really the overall talent on that side of the ball. Lots of good candidates. The defense hasn't been as dominant this year, but it has trended up in the last, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 weeks. I thought they were especially good in Dallas. Gave up that 92-yard touchdown where Derek Barnes should have sacked Dak Prescott for a safety. Instead, it goes over the top for a 92-yard touchdown. But outside of that play, they were very good, only allowed 20 points overall. That unit has really perked up. For you, Ben, who has been the MVP of the season?
It's a two-horse race, and the lead horse is a couple of lengths ahead for me. Aiden Hutchinson is the defensive MVP. I mean, he has 60 more pressures than any other teammate this season. Like, that's facing double teams. That's bouncing around the line, and I know Twitter will get up in arms about the pressures to sack rate, but, like, what he is doing is impactful. What he is doing is valuable. You see it last week, 3 sacks, got home for 3 of those, but what he has consistently done – produce like more than 5 pressures and I think all but 1 or 2 games this year. There's not a lot of guys doing that. And that's when you look at the top of any edge rusher metrics or rankings or stats, it's Hutchinson, it's Parsons, it's Crosby, it's Lawrence, it's guys like that. I mean, he's up there. He powers his pass rush. He powers this defensive line because it's continued to be a one-man show in that front because Aleem McNeil, who hasn't played in a month, is still second on the team in pressures. So what Aiden Hutchinson has done as the one-horse show up there has been absolutely ridiculous, and this team would not be where they are without him.
You know who's number 3 on the team in sacks, right?
Who is it?
It's Mel Fondue.
Of course it is.
Yeah. a safety who's been in the starting lineup for a month.
That's ridiculous.
In the 2 months before Mel Fondue was in the starting lineup, he averaged less than 1 defensive snap per game, and he's the number 3. And that's not taking anything away from Mel Fondue. He's been amazing, but it also shows the lack of variety and depth in the pass rush. And Aiden Hutchinson he's been so unbelievably good, and he gets so much attention in that pass rush because there is nobody else that's a consistent threat. So he's getting double, triple teams. And that's a bar like every good pass rusher has to like hit. You know, like you can win your one-on-ones, and once you start to do that and you're disruptive, then you get those chips and that extra attention. They roll passing plays away from you. And that's a new level that you have to break through. Yeah. And Hutchinson has learned to do that this season. And so for me, yeah, like it's a one horse race. You call it 2 horse. Like, apologies to Alex Anzalone, who's my quote unquote runner up, but it's not close. Hutchinson has been dominant for a pretty bad pass rush, and his 93 pressures on the season are third in the league. And again, he's doing it as a one horse man in the pass rush. He's been unbelievable. I forget who it was, apologies, but someone put out there, one of the film guys put out there a cut up of his spin move this season.
Yeah.
And it's him just tornadoing around some of the best offensive linemen in the league. The sacks haven't always been them. They've come in bunches, but again, that happens. Like, if the Lions had a number 2 pass rusher that was worth a shit, you would see a lot more Aiden Hutchinson sacks, because you couldn't quite design plays and protection plans the way that the offenses do, designed to negate Aiden Hutchinson. And yet you do see it in the pressures and the way he's affecting the pocket. 93, that's third in the league for a team that has almost nothing else going on besides him. He's an unbelievable talent, Ben, and I really enjoy watching him play.
Yeah, it's a two-horse race, but it's Secretariat taking on Little Sebastian, so it's not. So just to reinforce that, but no, Hutchinson, I mean, because seriously, he's getting doubled at the line, he's getting chipped by tight ends, and then when he breaks through, he's meeting a running back or a tight end or an H-back or something in the backfield. So like you said, maybe James Houston, maybe an off-season addition, maybe that's a 2024 development, but my God, they need a number 2 edge rusher so badly.
Put that on the offseason wish list along with a cornerback, please. Shout out to Kendall Vildor, who walked off the street and has played decent ball. But when he's your number 2, y'all got problems. Yeah, and pass rusher, corner, like, we wanted those things at the deadline. They didn't want to give up the resources, and we understand that. And I think that maximizes what they can do with what they got going beyond the season. But clearly they need help at those positions, and I think that's coming in the offseason. All right, moving along, because we got big football coming up in the next couple of weeks. Keith K wants to know, I'm sure you guys got this one before, but do you think what happened in Dallas could be a good thing in the end? feel like this could be just the thing we need to galvanize the team and get the Detroit versus everybody mindset back. Seems to have worked for the University of Michigan. I like Keith's framing on this question because we've really discussed every inch of this play, yes, both in copy and also here on the podcast over the weekend. And I also like the question because it speaks to one of the strengths of Dan Campbell. Their ability to be resilient. That's a buzzword you hear in the NFL, like, you know, any given Sunday, and it take them one at a time, all that stuff. But this is a team that lives it, that shows it, that they don't get rattled. They've played some awful ball. They got kicked in the face by Baltimore, and they come out and win the next week and play some of their best ball. They haven't had a losing streak in 14 months. That's a team record. I mean, they're one win against Minnesota from going this entire season without a losing streak, something they haven't done since, I believe, 72.
That's earth-shattering to hear.
Right, and they've done it against a relatively difficult schedule. And now you've got adversity of a different kind coming out of Dallas. People are fuming mad. Dan Campbell was fuming mad. He was as mad as irate as I've ever seen him on the field in the immediate aftermath of that play, yelling, I told you with the officials, because he literally handed the officials a sheet of paper before the game showing them the Taylor Decker play. And then they send Dan Skipper onto the field. I mean, we already know what happened. Dan Skipper runs on the field. He's doing a hand signal to tell the offense what personnel grouping they were going to be. He had he's flexing the right hand up in the air, the right arm up in the air, signaling jumbo formation. He had his other hand at his chest and a gun formation, which shows 12 personnel. The ref sees that from a guy who reported it's eligible earlier in the game and just assumed, oh, this big white guy is reporting it's eligible, while Taylor Decker is standing 3 feet away from him saying, sir, I'm eligible, and wiping at the numbers on the front of his jersey, which is the universal sign for, you guessed it, reporting is eligible. And Brad Allen, the official, doubled down after the game. The NFL tripled down after that, sending a ludicrous memo out to the league, to every team in the league, highlighting with a yellow circle Dan Skipper and outlining all the things he was supposed to do to report as eligible, while not even acknowledging the player on the field who is reporting is eligible. Ben, it makes my head explode. It has made the Lions' heads explode. Rod Wood is talking with the league about what the F is happening. But they have a game to play on Sunday, and there's some seeding on the line. And beyond that, they have the playoffs. And I can tell you right now, one of the reasons why Dan Campbell is playing Jared Goff and everyone else, there's the seeding to play for. But I really believe that it's, of course, you want to keep the momentum going. That's always the thing that comes into play when you're talking about resting guys in the regular season. But I think he just wants to avoid a losing streak going into the playoffs and the bad vibes that brings. And he wants to be able to shake off what happened in Dallas and really just reestablish good energy and good play and tight discipline and all that kind of stuff, because it'd be so easy to fall into chaos and to disorder coming out of something like that. And this is something that Dan Campbell has such documented success with. Do you agree with Keith, the questioner, about the Lions playing some of their best ball, that maybe this was a blessing in disguise and kind of avoiding some of the complacency that might have set in otherwise coming off the division championship?
Oh, I do. This is fuel for this team. This is fuel. And we just spoke with offensive coordinator Ben Johnson. He was kind of asked, like, how do you move on from something like that? And the answer was pretty much like, man, I coach for Dan Campbell. Like, you come in here Monday, he's moved on. He makes it so easy to move on. And, like, I think we titled, like, the headline on the podcast coming out of Dallas, The Power of Dan Campbell. Like, this is the power of Dan Campbell. We've seen it this week. Yeah, he was pissed off. We had to ask about it again on Monday. But, like, since then, man, you just see the power of Dan Campbell. You feel it in that locker room. You hear it from his defensive coaches, and just they're ready to move on from that mess. The Russian state TV propaganda letter sent out yesterday, just it's painful. Painful stuff for sure. Everyone has a right to be pissed off, but, like, this is what Dan Campbell, this is his superpower, like moments like this.
We got a lot of questions in this vein. John A. asked, do you think the players will be flat after the Dallas loss, or will they be out for blood in the Vikings game? A lot of stuff that goes into this vein, Ben, and I think it kind of it reminds me of what Dan Campbell said last week, which was our biggest opponent coming up is complacency. That was coming out of the Vikings game, the first one, where they clinched the title, and there was just a ton of celebrations and this you know, this long-awaited feeling of relief that finally, we've turned the corner. We've been kicked in the face for 30 years, and even our brief moments that we flirted with competency or had shots to win the division on the final day of the season in 2014 and 2016, like, it always ended in disappointment. They finally broke through. There was dancing in the locker room. There was, selfies. Yep. It was a moment of accomplishment in a league where it's physical, it's violent, it's high speed. The margins are razor thin. Feeling of accomplishment or a lack of hunger, it can be a death knell for a team. And I think that was a concern for Campbell coming out of the Vikings game. And so, spinning it forward, if there's anything good that's come out of what happened in Dallas, it's that complacency has no business in Detroit anymore. This locker room, this team, this organization, everyone is fired up to put that behind them. There's chip on their shoulder again, which I think maybe if you lost that winning a division title, putting a banner already in your practice facility, like if there was any moment of complacency, like we've made it, we've arrived, that all that stuff is gone because of what happened in Dallas. And I think that there is something to be said for that.
Yeah, John A. put it perfectly. I think they're out for blood this weekend. I really do think they're motivated. They're out for blood. They are treating this game like it matters, is like everything. Like everything is on the line. I really do get that. So I think they're out for blood 100%. Not much more to add what you said, because that's just where this team is. It's who they are. They built their roster this way for a reason. What's going on, everyone? Ben Raven with MLive's Detroit Lions beat here. Just want to point in the direction of MLive's new Dungeon of Doom Insider Tech service. Sign up now for a 14-day free trial. And then after that, it's only $4.99 a month to text with myself, to text with Kyle Monkey, and to text with Corey Woods. And not only are you going to get updates and analysis from us with some one-on-one individual conversations on the side, but you're going to be on the front line to be featured on MLive's Dungeon of Doom podcast when we come calling for mailbag questions. Once again, check out joinsubtext.com/Dungeon of Doom. 14-day free trial, $4.99 after that.
Ryan Comick from Grand Rapids wrote in to say, I am like most Lions fans and the team in that I am ready to move on from the Dallas debacle. Have said that sentence before. but I absolutely love the maturity we showed as a team afterwards. I feel like we will be the most locked in and loaded team in the NFC outside of San Francisco. This may be a blessing to hopefully get a shot at Dallas again with McNeil, Gardner Johnson, possibly James Houston back. And he goes on to talk about the scheduling in week 18 and how the Lions play first. And it allows to keep the games competitive, basically. But again, it's stuff in the same vein. Maybe we don't have to go too far into it. But I agree with Ryan. You know, I think there was a lot of, like listen, when the Chiefs had that that flag that took their go ahead touchdown off the board against, who was it?
The Bills.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Lots happened since then. Yep. You know, Patrick Mahomes kind of lost his stuff a little bit, and there's a lack of composure. And Andy Reid was fined whatever he was fined for criticizing the officials. Like, yeah, Dan Campbell was super pissed after that game, but he like kept his composure. I don't think he said a single thing that he would have regretted later on. Jared Goff had even more maturity in the moment. He's like, here's what happened. Taylor Decker reported as eligible. Dan Skipper did not. I know this. But that was he said it was a disappointment, but there wasn't a conspiracy, and they moved on. Like that, this was to a man what everyone said. Like they're like, here's what happened, but we're moving on. And I think that really shows the maturity of this team, despite how young it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Patrick Mahomes was complaining to Josh Allen at midfield before they had even gotten off the field. And you look at Goff and Prescott's meeting last week, and nope. I mean, just the way they've handled it from the moment they've been forced to handle it until now should induce optimism about this team's maturity and the people leading the show.
Joe Maloney asks, when is the NFL, and again, this is Joe's wording, not mine. Don't yell at me, editors. When is the NFL going to stop bullshitting around and hire full-time refs instead of these part-time losers that have nothing to do, nothing better to do on their days off than referee poorly in some places? If they haven't done it by now, I question if it's ever going to happen. That's probably the easiest way I can answer that. It's something that we've talked about over the years. Every time there's a major blown call and the Lions have been on the short end of some of those. There's been even bigger blown calls, even one that Dan Campbell himself was involved with you know, the Saints were in line. They got a stop to go to the Super Bowl, and the officials didn't throw a flag, and the Rams advanced, and Dan Campbell and the rest of the Saints went home. And that was in the NFC Championship game. That was a Super Bowl at stake. Like, at least the Lions play again this week, and they host a playoff game next week. Like, it hurt what happened in Dallas, but it could have been a lot worse. But to answer the question, I don't think it's going to happen, because it would have already if it were going to.
Yeah, and I think you can just look at how the NFL has responded to this. I mean, sure, taking that crew reportedly off the postseason rotation is one thing, but, like, throwing them back out there on a primetime slot this weekend again, sure, doesn't really send much of a good message. So, yeah, I think you've got your answer there. I don't think the NFL is looking at it as the crisis that the rest of the world is.
Jillian, friend of the program, asks, do we know if the drawing of the play that Dan gave the refs before the game exists? God, I hope so, and I hope it gets displayed somehow. The NFL Hall of Fame, the Louvre, something. I know that it exists. I don't know if it still exists in Detroit, if he still got it, if it's framed somewhere in a trash heap somewhere, been ceremoniously burned in effigy. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I would love to see it.
I would love to see that. You know, maybe the Hall of Fame shrine for Dan Campbell one day could have that drawing in it.
Arj O'Neill, from who's originally from Northville in the Detroit area, but now living in Los Angeles, asks, hey guys, you are kicking out tremendous coverage as usual. Thank you very much. This may be an NFL Films question, but usually Penei Sewell is mic'd up, at least for the pregame hype session, and he was standing right next to Decker during the two-point conversion reporting incident. Seems to me there might be actual audio confirmation. No? Thanks again. So here's the thing. There's a million mics near the field. Cameras, mics, you name it. Like, there's so much money in the NFL, and so many ways are cutting up the content. There's a 1,000% chance that there are at least one mic, if not multiple mics, that picked up the audio from the field, despite how loud it was in the stadium. There's no doubt in my mind. The thing is that the NFL always controls the audio and ultimately has a yes or no say in what gets released. Even from the Lions' perspective, that's always the case too, that they have mic'd up guys. But, like, Dan Campbell's always going to have, or Brad Holmes is always going to have veto control over, okay, I don't want to put that out there, either for a competitive reason, or maybe it just makes someone look bad, or I don't know, whatever. The NFL also controls that audio, Ben. So if there is something implicating an official in wrongdoing, which we already see the NFL covering for Brad Allen and the memo they sent out, which was ludicrous. I actually had a real challenge writing that story in a way that wasn't like just a total like hit job. Like, I wanted to be able to just say, hey, in a news story, like, as unbiased as possible, hey, this is what was sent out and what it means, and here's the context. But when you provide the context of that memo and, like, here's what they showed, and then here's what the facts were from the field, it's going to sound like a hit job anyway, because it was so ludicrous to highlight Dan Skipper and explain, here's how you're supposed to report as eligible, and here's Dan Skipper lined up incorrectly and illegally because he's a, while totally ignoring that Taylor Decker is the reporting receiver and he's standing right in front of Brad Allen. They don't even mention Taylor Decker in the video. They don't highlight him, nothing. It's a crazy video, clearly meant to cover for Brad Allen and this crew. So if there's audio out there implicating Brad Allen, you will never hear it unless there's some rogue employee someplace or a mistake is made and something gets published. I don't know, but, like, I would not hold my breath.
I was just going to say, I'm not trying to stir up the conspiracy theories. I know I just visited the JFK assassination point last weekend, but there is a non-zero chance in my mind that the NFL hasn't heard this interaction. Yep. There are mics on the goalposts. There are mics on every official. There are mics on several players. As you said, they've heard this. And you've seen the response, and you can take that as you will.
I have a feeling, Ben, that if there was audio confirming Brad Allen's story that Dan Skipper reported as eligible, considering what the links they've already gone to cover for Brad Allen, you would have already heard the audio. They would have leaked it through Tom Pelissero or somebody else, the NFL Network. You would already would have heard it. Yeah. You would have heard it by the time the day was up on Saturday night. And you haven't yet, and I think that's telling. All right, we can move on. The team is, we got to at some point. There's a lot of good questions that don't involve problematic laundry on the field in Dallas. So Eric asks, what was the best thing you ate at Jerry's World? I love this question, by the way.
Me too.
And Did you do your best to eat him into the poorhouse? Ben?
I did do my best to eat him into the poorhouse. And, you know, the carving station was great, but I fell in love with the lobster rolls that they had out. And they had some little Reuben egg rolls, too, that were pretty good. And I think I had 3 or 4 plates, had a couple of the desserts, too. I definitely did my best. I stuffed that MLive backpack full of a lot of Airheads from that stadium, too. So I did my best.
I stuffed my backpack with as much candy as possible. I'm not even a big candy guy. I like the carving station.
Yeah,
I'm a
yeah.
like New York strip. Like I don't eat a lot of steak. It's not like on the regular menu for me. But when I do have it, I really enjoy it. And hey, when I didn't have to pay for it,
exactly.
It's lovely. and that's I'm snubbing here the halftime Sundae
right.
ice cream yeah. station, an ice cream bar. With all its all the fixed things, it's just right. Like you could just take whatever you want. Like, how the hell are you supposed to stay awake when you're stuffing your face with like nachos and ice cream steak? I mean, God bless Jerry Jones. And then after the game, I mean, there's beer on tap.
Yeah,
just beer on tap.
They took it away so quick last weekend.
Oh, Ben, rookie mistake. See, you gotta when you come up from the from downstairs, you gotta grab the
yep.
beer.
Yep.
First, and then you got to just set it there. And like, because I don't want to drink beer and then have a bunch of work to do, because that's kind of a
right.
problematic mix. So I grabbed my 2 beers
yep.
and I set it in front of me. And then I work for a while and don't touch them. And then once I get like toward the conclusion of what I have to do, then I partake. That's the key. Because yeah, they take it away pretty early. It sounds like you got shut out.
I got an $8 Stella back at my hotel that night. I called that my post game beer.
That's so sad. God bless Jerry Jones, though.
That guy, too, and I didn't get it.
God bless Jerry Jones, though. He does a lot of things wrong, but he, in my opinion, but he certainly knows how to treat people right when it comes to his team and the football experience. I always love going down there.
From Minneapolis to Dallas, man, 2
yeah,
weeks in a row.
Yeah. And by the way, we might be going back to Dallas in like 2 weeks.
Sign
so.
Me up.
Can we, I mean... For a moment, we just envision a playoffs where the Lions host the Rams and Matthew Stafford in week one. They go back to Dallas, the rematch in week two of the postseason, and everything that entails and the retribution that would be at hand and the stakes and everything else with a shot to go to the NFC Championship game where you could face, I don't know, Matt Patricia's yeah. Eagles or something. Like
Bowser himself.
In this vein, Mendel Spalter asks, you saw that Sean McVay is resting Matthew Stafford in the final week of the regular season. He's basically saying that he would rather play Dallas in the first round than Detroit. What are your thoughts? So the situation is the Rams are currently the 6th seed. They would go to Detroit if they win, or even if they lose, they can still come to Detroit if the Packers lose, correct?
Yeah, that's how I got it too. Yep.
If the Rams lose, then there's that chance that they could fall back to the 7th seed and have to go to Dallas rather than Detroit. So that's where the questioner is coming from. But I don't think they're thinking in those terms, yeah. especially if you think about how Sean McVay usually handles stuff. They believe strongly in rest and the advantages of that. And there's that give and take to everything, right? You can rest your guys, but then you run the risk of having rust the following week or maybe just losing some rhythm or momentum. Then you have a team like Detroit that right now, especially given what happened last week, really wants to maintain rhythm, momentum, go into the postseason with good energy, a win. That stuff's important to them. But they obviously run the risk of injuring somebody, Jared Goff or another starter that could be critical to the postseason. And you see that all the time where it happens around the league. Someone gets hurt in week 17 or 18 or what have you, and it affects your postseason. Of course, losing your momentum or whatever by resting guys can also affect your like there's a give and take there, and the Rams are erring toward rest, and I think a lot of teams around the league are. Patrick Mahomes isn't playing in week 18. Lamar Jackson's not playing in week 18. Joe Flacco, the legend, is not playing in week 18.
MVP.
But Jared Goff is. So I'm real curious to see how this dynamic plays out. To each their own, but Dan Campbell's going with Goff and the starters.
Yeah, my take on Stafford after covering him for the 2.5 years I did, this guy probably has like 7 injuries he's dealing with right now that he's working through. So like getting him a week off, they're still in the playoffs. They have an experienced quarterback. I know it's been a roller coaster freaking ride for Carson Wentz, but like he's been in these moments before. He's been in that offense working with McVay. So there's probably some comfort there. But like you said, the Rams value rest more than just about anyone, because those starters, those fringe starters, they do not touch the field in the preseason. So this is just them sticking to their guns. And I mean, Matthew Stafford has propelled Aaron Donald in a college all-star game and a college all-star team to the playoffs. Losing Stafford is disastrous. Losing a quarterback is disastrous. But like, rest for Matthew Stafford, we know how important that is this time of year. Like, we've been there, we've seen it. That guy's banged up. He's a warrior. Settle him down for a week. You don't have to worry about him coming out hot or not. He is who he is.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I haven't covered Stafford. There's other quarterbacks I might be more concerned about, but he's just a prodigious talent. He's also been really, really banged up out in LA. We saw that even in the last couple of years in Detroit. So I think getting him some rest, I understand what the Rams are doing. For what it's worth, they're playing the San Francisco 49ers, who themselves are resting Brock Purdy and Christian McCaffrey. So I think who wins that game is a real toss-up. Ben, let's just say the Rams come to Detroit and the first week of the postseason, which, I mean, other things can happen, including the Packers or even the Lions moving up to number two. But I think the most likely outcome is the Lions host the Rams in the wild card round. Question for you. How do you think the crowd reacts to Matthew Stafford?
I think at first it'll be a heavy mixture of cheers and boos before the game starts. But the second that game starts, that's an enemy. That's an opposing quarterback. I don't think there will be too many blurred lines, and I don't think those lame Detroit Rams shirts will be in the crowd, more than one or two. I you know, before the game, sure, pay your respects. That's a legend. That's the best franchise quarterback in team history. But once that whistle blows, I mean, that's an opposing quarterback.
The thing for me, and I don't know what's going to happen, but this is the way my brain plays it out. Matthew Stafford to me always seemed very polarizing, you know, in terms of how good he was or how much of the blame he shared for the team failures throughout his time. When it came to media, when it came to sports radio, just some of these conversations around, until you go to the stadium on Sundays and you see the tens of thousands of Stafford jerseys and the way that he was so universally loved and cheered, it always felt to me in person that he was revered, and it was only he only seemed polarizing kind of like through the lens of the media or particularly sports radio. And I think that when he comes back, if he comes back in the playoffs, you're going to hear a lot of cheers for him. I don't think it's going to be that mixed. I'm not saying they're going to like cheer his every touchdown or whatever during the game, but when he runs on the field, when he touches the ball for the first time or whatever, I think you're going to hear a lot of cheers.
Yeah, I mean, the Stafford jersey's still in the top three of jerseys we see at home.
That's a good
the
follow-up question, too. Like, let's say the Rams come, like, because you're right, it's in the top three. It's like Aiden Hutchinson. You see a lot of St. Brown these days, Goff. Stafford's right there in that mix in terms of the most popular jerseys. Do you still see, again, Barry Sanders, Calvin Johnson? That's probably the top five right there. So let's say the Rams come to Detroit for the wild card round. What happens to the Stafford jerseys? Do you still see them, or do people like just leave them at home? Like, I think probably the latter, right?
Yeah, leave it at home or get your white tape out and write Williams on it. There's one easy fix without ruining that jersey. Just put Williams on the back with a little tape.
I love it. We're missing practice right now, Ben. I feel like I just kind of like powering through and doing a couple more, and then we can close up shop. Adam in Singapore, as we alluded to before, shout out to Adam and shout out to Singapore, I guess.
That's right.
Big thanks. He says, thinking you guys might have the answer to my question. I'm in Singapore and trying to decide on whether to come back for the first playoff game in Detroit. The question is whether the first game is Sunday, the 14th of January, in which case Adam can get here in time, or Saturday, the 13th, with which Adam cannot. Thanks for the help. So basically just asking, when do the, when do we know when the first game is? We should know on Sunday night. This is not a great topic of conversation, probably. That's just a quick answer, but we've gotten it quite a bit, and I've seen it on Twitter too. So just in the interest of clarity, the Lions play on Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. against the Vikings. There's some late games. They'll know their opponent by 7, 8 p.m. once the 4 p.m. games go final. The pairings will be announced. Not the pairings, but the game times themselves will be set Sunday night. And so we should know then who and when the playoff game is going to take place.
Adam should definitely be pulling for the Rams, because if it's Lions-Rams, you'll have an extra day to get here, I think, Monday night, 8:15 p.m.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. Lions-Rams, I think that'd probably be the sexiest matchup in week one in the whole league.
Absolutely.
All right. William Rainey asks, The defense has shown steady improvement despite an arguable lack of talent. Now we are getting some key pieces back. This unit may be peaking at just the right time. How much are we underestimating the contributions of Aaron Glenn? And what's the odds he's also gone next year, especially if the defense plays well in playoffs? Well, Ben, your thoughts?
We've spent a lot of the year kind of defending, kind of explaining the power of Aaron Glenn too, and I do think you're seeing it kind of pay off here down the stretch. But yeah, James Houston, Aleem McNeil, CeeDee Deuce, those are big pieces potentially coming back, while some other pieces are playing some of their best ball, like Ifeatu Melifonwu, Aiden Hutchinson, still heating up, still getting better. So here's the thing. I feel pretty confident that Aaron Glenn will be back. I feel very confident he'll get some more head coaching interviews, but I don't think he's at that spot yet. One more year of growth like this, because remember where this team was last year. What we said needed to happen was this defense needed to move into the middle of the half of the league for them to be a playoff team. Guess what's happened? It's a top three run defense. They've taken some lumps in the past game, but lately the takeovers have come up. The coverage is getting a little better. Looking at what they have, I mean, it's more lemons, rotten lemons into lemonade, truly, these last couple of weeks. But yeah, I don't think he'll get a head coaching job. I think he'll get more interviews, but I think he'll be back. But I think he is. He's in that next echelon of coaches that are going to take that next step up, especially with another year of growth like this one.
I will add the NFLPA came out with a very interesting player survey, and I can't remember how many players, but it was like 1,000 or something, who responded to this anonymous survey, basically ranking the most popular coordinators in the league. Players were asked to rank their offensive or defensive coordinator and special teams coordinator on a scale of 1 to 10. Yeah. I found it very interesting. The Lions placed two coordinators, neither of whom was Ben Johnson, who's almost assuredly going to have a job elsewhere in the next couple of weeks. Dave Phipp was fourth among special teams coordinators, and Aaron Glenn was number one, and not just for defensive coordinators, but he was the most popular coordinator overall. He had the highest grade. I didn't see an actual the number that he got, but he was the top regarded coordinator in the whole league. Doesn't mean he's necessarily the best coordinator. Doesn't necessarily mean he's the best candidate for head coaching job. It does echo the things we've heard a lot from players, is that they love playing for Aaron Glenn. They think he is extremely smart, extremely organized. I think there's a lot of respect for Aaron Glenn in house. Like just a couple of weeks ago when we asked Ben Johnson about head coaching stuff, and his response to that was, did you ask AG that question? Go ask AG that question, because that guy's phenomenal. And the follow-up to that question at the time was basically like, the outside world doesn't think as highly about him, basically, and the production hasn't always been there, particularly when compared to your offense. So why do we keep hearing the stuff about Aaron Glenn? And Ben Johnson's response to that was basically, this guy's phenomenal with the players. And now we're seeing the player end of it saying, yeah, he's effing phenomenal. And so, to answer the question, I wouldn't hire Aaron Glenn. I don't think the results on the field stack up with the kind of candidates that typically get head coaching jobs. A guy like Ben Johnson, for example, whose offense has been unbelievable, and it's unbelievable again this year, and has carried this team. But you see a lot of lemonade being made right now by Aaron Glenn. Like, they spent the entire offseason, like, we thought they were going to go in the draft and get a ton of defensive help, and they didn't really. They got Brian Branch in the second round, but they went, you know, running back. They got a linebacker, but their linebacker is a backup in the first round. Tight end, like even in free agency, like they went out and got a couple of guys, but those guys haven't played. Emmanuel Mosley played 2 snaps this year before blowing out his ACL. We've seen CJ Gardner-Johnson in 2 games. The defense has suffered for it, Ben, but in the last month, they've played pretty good ball. The last couple weeks, 6 takeaways, and again, allowing 20 points in Dallas, where the Cowboys were averaging more than 40 points per game this year. That's a hell of a job. They're playing good ball. There's a lot of lemonade being made on that side of the ball. I don't know if that means Aaron Glenn's getting a job, but certainly he's a popular guy. Certainly he's going to get interviews. And if he doesn't get a job, I really do think we're going to see edge rusher, corner, targeted, and then with those premium draft picks or premium money and free agency, and we'll see a corner turned next year on that side of the ball.
Aaron Glenn's greatest argument for an NFL head coaching job now in the future is the development he has got out of some of these guys. Aleem McNeil in year 3 has gone from, hey, maybe this guy will be a really good starter for a long time, to one of the best interior defenders in the league when he was on the field. Aiden Hutchinson, took a step. Yeah, the sacks are down, but he took a step forward in his pressures, in his overall play. Just you look at Brian Branch. You look at Melifonwu. They banged the table for this guy for 3 years saying it's just durability. It's just durability. Trust us on this one. And look at what he's done recently. So I just think, and there's so many more cases of that, but his work as a developmental coach while having the support and love of his players, I mean, that's really hard to get in this league. So, I mean, a little more production, a little more out of that defense last year, maybe a couple more lemons that aren't so rotten in there. And, I mean, yeah, you could see him getting a job. I mean, I can see it for sure in the next year or two is him getting being a real serious candidate for teams. But like you said, a little more is needed on the field for sure, but he's going to get the chance to do that.
We're getting long in the tooth. Sorry about that, producer Patrick. But let's just roll a little bit deeper, and then we'll cut this off. There's just so many good questions this week, and obviously a lot of interest going into the season finale of an incredible season. So we got two questions. I'm just going to combine them in the interest of expediency. But Will Holmes, Gil Thrasher, both asked about Jared Goff contract extension. I thought Will Holmes worded it pretty well. He said, "Good morning, gentlemen. Question on potential Goff extension. Wouldn't it be wise for the front office to let him play out 2024 before making that decision? The current cap hit doesn't seem prohibitive. They could evaluate his performance independent of Ben Johnson next year. That's obviously assuming Johnson gets a job, which I think he will. Plus get a full offseason and season to assess Hendon Hooker's development. Am I missing part of this equation?" I think that makes a lot of sense, Will. Mm-hmm. If you can do that, I think it makes a lot of sense. The downside is that, first of all, that's not typically how it works for a quarterback. So you risk, like, usually quarterbacks get extended before that contract year to offer, you know, continuity within an organization. The last thing you want is to have serious questions at the quarterback position. I think you risk maybe some bad blood with Goff if you don't honor that kind of tradition when he's played as well as he has. I think when you don't sign him and you go into 24 as a contract year with a third round pick who's rising up alongside him, then you start to get into the questions about quarterback controversy, which again is just not good for cohesion, for continuity, all that kind of stuff. And then in terms of like the more tangible downside, the longer you wait to sign Jared Goff to an extension, the more expensive that extension gets. It's already going to be like $45 million. That pay scale in quarterbacks. The next time some guy who's top 10 in the league as a quarterback is up for a contract, he's going to get the number one deal or number two deal or number three deal. And that keeps escalating the money that you have to spend on the quarterback. So if you do end up signing Jared Goff to some kind of crazy expensive deal, $45 million per or whatever, that price tag continues to go up if you don't sign him next offseason, because the wage scale keeps going up. Plus, Goff will have even more leverage than he did before. Say he plays really well in 24. Hooker's not what you thought he was. Then he's going to have all the leverage at that point, and he can leverage even more money out of the deal.
Exactly. I mean, he's not getting less than Daniel Jones. I mean, he's not getting less than Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, it's really important to remember that. And everything you laid out is perfect, because Will Holmes, I mean, you're laying out exactly what I would do if this were a Madden 2024 franchise. But, like, there is the human element. I mean, the strength to Goff's kind of growth here has been his comfort, his trust in the system. I mean, think about where he came in LA, how that ended, how he came here, and how he has shifted. A lot of that has been the trust, the love, and the full confidence infused in him from Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes.
Yeah.
Love something like Brad Holmes loves Jared Goff, especially the way he's been playing these last 2 years. That deal, feel pretty confident, it's happening this offseason, and you can thank Daniel Jones for the extra zeros on that.
I think you make an excellent point, Ben, and something I hadn't really even considered in my thinking around this, but you know, Goff was given up on in LA. He felt that. He felt Sean McVay turn on him. He was benched, for Christ's sakes, like down the stretch in his final season there. Even after the trade went final, according to reports out there, I forget who had the report. Forgive me, it's not mine. I'm just taking it from somewhere else. But there's a report out there saying Jared Goff hit up Sean McVay and is like, "I still want my exit interview. Give me my exit interview. I want to hear to my face what I did wrong." there was bad blood there, you know, and Goff believed in himself still, but like there's like obviously some questions about like how it didn't work when it was going so well for so long in LA and then went so bad in 2 years after that. He was the most turnover prone player in the whole league, and obviously he's turned around in Detroit. Scheme and talent around him is always the most important thing. But having a staff that believed in you from the start and said, this deal is about draft picks, sure, but we wanted Jared Goff. And the world might think he's a bridge quarterback, but he's not a bridge quarterback to us. We think, like, we've loved this guy. Like, Brad Holmes has seen this guy since he was in college. Yeah. Brad Holmes once told me personally, you know, when I was having a bad day back then, I would just turn on Jared Goff tape from Cal. And it would just make me feel so good watching that guy spin it. That's what he said. I thought it was a great quote.
That's a great quote.
Like, when you have been forgotten, when you have been cast aside, like someone saying you're not good enough to be a starting quarterback in this league anymore. We want to go to a Super Bowl and you're not good enough for us. And we're going to give away two first-round picks to make it happen for a different quarterback. Like, Jared Goff feels that, and he comes to a place where people believe in him. And Ben Johnson sits down with him in that first offseason and says, Jared Goff, I believe in you. Let's talk about what you like to do, what you don't like to do, and let's design an offense together. Yeah. Like, that's something Sean McVay never did. And Jared Goff felt that. He felt the ownership. He felt the love. And these aren't reasons to – you know, sign them or not sign them now. Like, you have to make what's in the best financial and talent interest of the team going forward. But if you don't sign him next offseason and you go into a contract year for Jared Goff with a third round pick right behind him, and you have the questions swirling about what the future is at that position, and every game it's like, oh, Jared Goff didn't play well, now it's Hendon Hooker time. Mm-hmm. Or he plays really well and it's like, oh, Jared Goff's gonna like leverage the team for even more cash. Like, it just, you go down a path that winning teams with quarterback stability typically don't. You just typically don't see it. Like, occasionally, maybe a Kirk Cousins situation where that it's kind of different but sort of the same. But it's rare in this league. Typically, when a competitive team has a good quarterback, they want continuity for all the reasons we've laid out. And and I think you did a great job of doing that. Something I hadn't even really considered.
Thanks. Yeah, the Lions are not going to deviate from that unless Jared Goff gives them a reason to.
Yeah. We're running real low on time. Let's do one more. I'm just kind of scrolling here. Let's see. Let's wrap up with Jason Obermiller, kind of looking forward a little bit. And I think it's a great question. Jason asks, hey guys, thanks for your time and diligence to make following the Lions so much more fun. Do you envision our success being sustainable for multiple years rather than just a splash and back to, oh no, we suck again, LOL. With Brad's drafting skills and how young our big stars are, I'm thinking it will continue for years. Thoughts?
This is built for the long term. I mean, yeah, I know they got guys to re-sign coming up and stuff, but the way they've built this, the way they acted at the trade deadline, even this year, forward thinking. I mean, this is built for long-term success. They are ahead of schedule right now, and it would take some catastrophic changes and injuries to make me change my tune on that. The offensive line, the defense is young. I mean, the coaching staff, this thing is built for the long term, and Brad Holmes has given us every single reason in the world to believe in his drafting ability.
What's crazy to me, Ben, is they're having one of their best regular seasons ever. They can match the franchise record for wins in a regular season on Sunday if they beat the Vikings. They should be better next year. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just that their window is opened. It's that they're at the start of the growth curve still. Like, they're a top, like, they're one of the five youngest teams in the whole league. They're among the top five teams in terms of like the snaps that are under contract for next year. And if you think about the most important players on this team, they're all locked up beyond this year. You start to get into more questions beyond that, particularly with Taylor Decker at left tackle. I think there's some long-term issues they might have to consider on the offensive line, certainly at guard. Yeah. Jonah Jackson's probably their most notable starter who's not under contract beyond this year. And we've talked about our doubts whether something gets done. But let's not get lost in the weeds, man. Jared Goff, Penei Sewell, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Aiden Hutchinson, Sam Laporta, a rookie, Jahmyr Gibbs, a rookie. Like, this is a young team with talent that is locked up, veteran, young guy, whatever, beyond this year. You never know with injuries. Jared Goff could go down next year, Penei Sewell, whatever. Like, that's a variable you can't account for from year to year. But just in terms of what you're bringing back on paper next year, they can be even better than they were this year.
Oh, yeah, Montgomery, Cam Sutton, first year of those contracts. Those guys are here. Those are important veterans. You get another cornerback on the side of Cam Sutton, all of a sudden you love what that looks like on the outside. So it's like the aggression in last year's free agency paired with Brad Holmes' continued dominance of the draft board. This is long-term, man. This is long-term.
We blew through practice for you guys. We didn't go to practice today. We were planning on wrapping up in time. Let's bang this out real quick and go to practice so we don't have to do it later because we got busy lives going on these days. But I really enjoyed the questions, Ben. I thought they were fabulous this week. They really met the moment with everything the Lions have going on. Lions-Vikings on Sunday. Lions gunning for their 12th win of the season, which would be a franchise record. They're in the 3 seed now, Ben. They have a outside chance of going to number 2. But either way, we have playoff football coming to the Motor City the following week. We'll be at Ford Field the next couple of weeks watching some of the most compelling football of our times on this beat, which have been pretty bleak for a long time. And I'm really looking forward to what we see over the next couple of weeks.
No, I can't wait for the playoffs to start. I can't believe it's actually going to be here.